From the studios in the Communication Arts and Sciences Building on the campus of Michigan State University, this is MSU Today. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus by Russ White.
Thank you, Lynn. Kirk Heinze hosts today as we focus on sustainability in our Greening of the Great Lakes focus.
In July, Consumers Energy will have a new president and CEO. We'll meet Patricia Poppe and talk about several topics related to Michigan's energy future. We'll also learn about MSU Extension's health and nutrition initiatives in places like Detroit and Flint. And we'll get a tourism update, a 2016 prognostication from Dan Musser, the president of the Grand Hotel.
MSU Today begins at 4:06.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a real pleasure to welcome back to the program Patricia Poppe. Patricia is the Senior Vice President of Distribution Operations, Engineering, and Transmission at Consumers Energy, and as of July the 1st, 2016, she will become President and CEO, succeeding John Russell. Patty, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
First of all, congratulations. On July 1, you will become President and CEO. You're the first woman to head a company that's been around for about 130 years.
Well, it's a real honor. You know, we have a great company. I have wonderful coworkers, and it's a privilege for me to lead them in serving the people of Michigan.
Big in the news, and I want to get to this right away, the Flint situation. And you folks have really stepped up in Flint. A lot of companies are doing that, a lot of individuals. But tell our listeners what Consumers is doing with respect to the situation in Flint and the water crisis.
Well, you know, we have a service center in Flint. We have many employees who live and work in Flint, so it is really part of our family. And we have made a contribution through the foundations in Flint to help the children recover and get the treatment and testing that they require. We are also doing matching grants of employee donations, so any dollars our employees donate will match. So it's a total of $75,000 grant to the city of Flint. And actually, another important point and the important role that we play in Flint, because we serve the people of Flint with gas, natural gas, and electricity, we've made significant upgrades to our infrastructure in Flint over the last 5 years. We have dedicated hundreds of our employees to upgrading the gas service lines to people's homes, as well as the mains, as well as the electric distribution system to improve their reliability. So Flint is a heartbeat in our service territory and the people that we serve. And so we take that responsibility very seriously. We certainly didn't wait for a crisis to get in and start modernizing the system in Flint. And so we're very committed to making Flint a vibrant place to live and work.
What I like about what you're doing and others as well, and taking a proactive approach, though, forget the blame game. I mean, Coach Izzo came out the other day and said something very similar to that. Let's get on with fixing the problem.
That is, you know, I love the governor's relentless positive attitude and positive action. We believe that it is a very unfortunate situation. I heard Brian Kelly, in fact, this morning call it a horrible situation. I agree. There's no room for blame at this juncture. It's time to fix the problem. And so anything that Consumers Energy can do to be of assistance to helping our employees and the residents of Flint, we are all for it.
Patty, let's turn to something we talked about a couple of years ago, and that's the commitment that Consumers has to renewable energy. One of my favorite topics. I'm a proud consumer customer. It's been fabulous being a customer for all these years. You folks installed my 240 charger for my Chevy Volt. It's working beautifully. But renewable energy, we hit the 10% by 2015. That was legislatively mandated. Now there's talk about increasing that as much as 20 to 30%. Where is Consumers right now in the whole conversation about the increase in the renewable energy portfolio?
We are for it. We think that a clean energy portfolio is important to customers, and as a result, we are the largest renewable producer here in Michigan, and wind has been a very nice part of our portfolio. Our price to install and deliver wind is down 75% than what we thought originally it would be, and so we think it's important to include renewable sources as part of our total portfolio. And as you may know, we are closing down 7 of our coal-fueled power plants in April of this year. We are closing down more coal units than any other utility but one in the nation. And in fact, Sustainalytics is a third-party sustainability benchmark. They have determined that Consumers Energy is the number 2 of all utilities in America sustainable energy providers. And we feel great about that because we are committed to making sure that our customers have the kind of energy that they need when they need it. And so we are very, very focused on a great balanced portfolio.
You mentioned this earlier in your comments, but the cost of producing wind energy, the cost of producing solar, there was a lot of talk initially that that was going to be very expensive and then those expenses would be passed on to the consumer. But you just mentioned it. The cost of producing energy is lower than I think a lot of people, including maybe folks in your own company, anticipated.
Yes, and so solar is still, I would put it in the category of very expensive. However, the price is dropping dramatically, and we are very open and intrigued with the idea that we would be able to provide solar energy to customers. And so we've got a new program, our Solar Gardens program, that I would love to tell you more details about.
Tell us a little bit about the program and whether I should get involved or not.
Well, you definitely should get involved. We are very excited about Solar Gardens. You know, the idea that a customer would purchase solar panels, put them on their roof, and then have to maintain them, that's a big commitment, and it's very expensive. What we're trying to test and provide is the ability to have what we call utility-scale solar. We can get the cost down because we're doing it at utility scale and utility maintenance commitments, high reliability, and a partnership with Western Michigan University and Grand Valley State University. Their students, their population on their campuses is very motivated to have renewable energy as a key source of the energy portfolio on those campuses. So they have partnered with us to build 2 installations, one at Western Michigan and one at Grand Valley. And we're offering then the rest of our customers to participate in that solar garden. And so you actually purchase energy from one of the blocks of solar energy from that garden. And it's a great partnership with those universities. We're already 46% subscribed on both of those solar gardens, and we're offering the opportunity for our other customers to participate as well.
So let me, as somebody that's looking at this program, if I sign up for this program, it may cost me a premium, a little bit more, but I know exactly where my energy is coming from. I know that what I'm using in my vault, in my house, et cetera, is solar.
Well, and you also pay less than you would if you installed all that equipment on your home. And so we think it's a really important economic opportunity for our customers to get access to solar energy without having to pay the high price and the high maintenance of installing it on your own home.
You mentioned partnerships with Grand Valley and Western Michigan University. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the partnership you've had with Michigan State University and the facility for rare isotope beams. You folks are actually putting in, as I understand it, a substation to provide the power that we're going to need to run that facility.
Yes, that is a huge investment for the state of Michigan. Michigan State is absolutely on the map as a world-class research facility, and we're excited to be their power behind the power. And actually, we're also running natural gas to that service so they can convert from their coal on their campus to natural gas. And we're really excited to be their partner in cleaning their energy fleet as well.
What is the energy portfolio going to look like maybe 10 years from now?
I think there's always going to be a need for base load power. And so from our estimation, natural gas is a great bridge fuel. It is clean and it is abundant. It is economic. We can fuel our businesses, particularly, you know, you talk about the assembly line over here at Lansing Grand River, General Motors assembly line right down the street. They need base load power. They can't count on wind. Now, when storage as storage continues to evolve and innovate, that could change the portfolio. I don't believe in the next 10 years there will be a dramatic storage breakthrough that transforms and makes renewable intermittent sources base load. Mm-hmm. But I do think that our percentage of renewable energies will continue to grow, and we are always balancing the ability for our customers to afford that energy and the cleanest mix. So, for example, the Clean Power Plan that has been mandated by the EPA, we are already meeting those standards. We're ahead of the curve on our carbon mitigation and carbon management because of the closure of our coal plants and our conversion to natural gas. So we're not waiting for regulation to help us bring a clean, balanced portfolio to the people of Michigan. We feel it's our duty to do that, and we are using our best engineering wherewithal to find the best mix that our customers can afford, and they can feel proud that they've got a good, clean energy balance.
Speaking of affordability and availability, there is one issue out there that's been debated in our legislature and among folks across the state of Michigan, and that is opening up the amount of energy that can be purchased on the open market. Right now, I think that threshold is 10%. I'd like to get consumers' perspective on that whole debate, because that's going to begin again in the legislature, as I understand it.
So I'd say the crux of the issue is this. Our utilities and our regulated construct in the state of Michigan says that the utilities will be the provider of last resort. That means that every citizen in Michigan can count on delivery of energy. We believe that opening up that retail open access to more customers actually makes Michigan, number one, less competitive and does not serve the needs of our citizens. So we are very committed to fighting for our customers. The 1.8 million customers that we have are picking up a false subsidy for 300 customers that have energy provided by out-of-state interests. These out-of-state interests, I call it a loophole in our energy law, have exploited that loophole and get a $150 million subsidy. They get a discount of $150 million. And these are big, sophisticated energy purchasers and sellers that are really riding on the backs of our small businesses and our families. And we think if we expect energy to be delivered to all people of Michigan at all times, then we need to have a Michigan energy solution. And that Michigan energy solution does not include expanding access to this false subsidy. I don't think it's fair that you, our consumer's energy customer, should pick up the tab for a big, sophisticated energy buyer. We think they need to pay their full freight and make sure that energy is delivered to all of our customers at the most fair price. And in fact, if we did not have that loophole in our current law, every customer in Michigan would get a 4% discount on their energy bill. You are picking up the tab today for those sophisticated out-of-state interests, and we're not for that.
You know, that's interesting, because in all the debate that I've heard, you don't hear about the subsidy that I'm paying, that my great producer Russ White is paying, that your great communications director Dan Bishop is paying, all of those sorts of things. You don't hear that argument. What you hear is that this is going to open up the marketplace and make prices more competitive.
Yeah, and you can, when we study, and this obviously we study, you look at every state that has full deregulation, they have wild swings in their prices. Their customers do not pay less than we pay in Michigan. And so it's not, it's a philosophical argument, but the facts are not on the side of that philosophical argument that choice equals lower prices. It doesn't pan out in the data and the facts. And so what we're fighting for is to make sure that we have fair prices for all of our customers in Michigan. Our profits are held whole. We don't stand to have a big profit windfall if we eliminate choice. Our costs are covered. Who picks up the tab is our customers, and we're not for our customers paying this cross-subsidy. We think it should be fair and equal so that Michigan is an attractive place for new businesses to come and for families to thrive.
Well, good for our listeners to know. We've got just a few seconds left, but I would like to ask you about, in general, some of the work of your foundation. We alluded to it earlier in terms of the Flint crisis and situation, providing funds to help offset that problem. But in general, the foundation does a lot of things for community sustainability.
We do. Our foundation is committed to healthy and vibrant communities all across the state. We are very clear that that foundation is not about helping our business, but rather helping our communities, because we know if our communities are healthy, our company is healthy. So we are very proud of the commitment that we make to wildlife refuge, to many of the environmental sustainability groups across the state, as well as things like theaters and quality of life in all of our communities where we live and work. And it's a real source of pride for us that we have that kind of commitment to our communities around the state.
Well, Patty, so good to see you again, to have you back on the program. I've been talking with Patricia Poppe. She's the Senior Vice President of Distribution Operations, Engineering, and Transmission at Consumers Energy. On July 1, she will become the President and CEO. Congratulations again, and thank you for being on Greening the Great Lakes.
Thank you so much.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a real pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Jeff Dwyer. He is the interim director of Michigan State University Extension. He's been in the saddle now for a few months. He comes from a rather eclectic background. Jeff, tell us a little bit about your background and welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here, and it's an honor to be a part of the MSU Extension team. So to talk about them is a great thing for me. So my undergrad degree is from a small liberal arts school on the West Coast, and I got my PhD at the University of Florida. In my career, I've been on the faculty at the University of Florida. I was the director of the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State for a number of years in the 90s. And since about 10 years ago, I've had the pleasure of being at Michigan State University for the last decade as a senior associate dean in the College of Human Medicine, and actually officially since January 1st as the new director of MSU Extension.
Well, I know one of the things that you're really interested in, and one of the things that sort of highlighted your candidacy, was this advocacy of the link between MSU Extension programs and human and osteopathic medicine. I know that's a big ticket in terms of your management portfolio.
Well, it really is, and thank you for mentioning that. I think it's important to know I've been a fan of Extension for a very long time, but I have worked closely with Extension for the last couple of years, in particular around this very topic. And really, my perspective on this and what I appreciate having the opportunity to talk about is that Extension in our Health and Nutrition Institute in particular does a lot of amazing community-based healthcare work. And these programs use the best evidence-based programs out of Stanford and other places, and they're programs that others teach as well. But remember, we have 600 people all over the state of Michigan, so we're everywhere. And so where those programs aren't, we can be. What we need to work on is that the traditional healthcare environment, physicians, don't know enough about those programs. And so really one of the things we're working on is to make them aware of our diabetes chronic disease programming, our chronic pain programming, our health and nutrition program, because these are things that physicians should be able to, in effect, prescribe for their patients because they're offered right outside the door of the physician's office in many cases.
One thing a lot of folks, a lot of listeners may not know, but Michigan State University's medical colleges are somewhat unique compared to the traditional research universities. I mean, part and parcel of the whole land-grant ethos, our medical program is out in the state. I mean, there couldn't be much better partnership given Extension's presence in every county in Michigan, given our medical school's presence throughout the state of Michigan.
You're correct about that. And, you know, I think those who know Michigan State and certainly are part of Michigan State, but our alumni and others should be very proud of the fact that between the College of Osteopathic Medicine and the College of Human Medicine, there are nearly 2,000 medical trainees all over the state. I'm certainly familiar with the College of Human Medicine in great detail, having been in that college. And as you point out, the College of Human Medicine has 7 campuses now, ranging from Southfield to Marquette. And I think to further make the point, you know, people should be proud of the fact that 50 years ago, a lot of really smart people had the idea to do this, because in places like the Upper Peninsula forever, where Michigan State has had a medical school campus for over 40 years, if you live in the Upper Peninsula and see a physician there, there's a 1 in 3 chance that that physician is a product of Michigan State's campus. And that's important, because a place like the Upper Peninsula is still medically underserved. So you have to ask the question, what would it be if not for that campus there. And certainly osteopathic medicine has had similar impacts all around the state. And so it's really something to be proud of. But you're exactly right. You take the footprint of those two schools, add in the ag bio stations, add in social work that trains people all over the state, nursing, the footprint that Michigan State University has on this state, and then the fact that extension is everywhere is really something remarkable.
Well, let's move from the UP for a moment to a place that is much in the news, unfortunately, and that's the city of Flint, a paradigm example of where extension, medical programs, the city of Flint, a lot of different partners can come together to try and help folks.
Well, that really is the case, and as a relative newcomer to extension, I have to say that while we're all just sick to our stomachs about what has happened, I think for many it's time to start thinking and talking about what can we do and how can we help these kids, and really to remember that these were kids and families and in many respects a population that needed a lot of help before this. And so I think it's important to remember those kinds of things. But you're right, it's been a fascinating thing because Extension's been in Flint for 100 years. We're going to be there for the next 100 years. We just did a count the other day. When you total up the time that people spend there, we have 12 full-time equivalents in Flint already, and we're adding to that as we speak to address the issue. But it does come down to partnerships. And so, you know, as you pointed out, on the medical side, the College of Human Medicine has been in Flint for over 40 years as well. So we're working very closely with the College of Human Medicine, but also the College of Education, that has major programming in Flint and is doing some really outstanding work in early childhood education, and other colleges as well. But then Extension has this unique reach, right? Because we work directly with people in our Health and Nutrition Institute and our Child and Children and Youth Institute, but we also have these longstanding connections with the agricultural community, farm families, commodity groups, and things like that. And so a couple of good examples are last week, having had the opportunity to engage with the dairy farm community and Michigan milk producers, and 4 days later, 12,000 gallons of 2% milk were delivered in Flint. Today, I'll be talking to someone who's from the bean commodity environment and wants to bring beans. But then what we're able to do is Extension is already on the ground, already teaching classes to train people how to cook these things that we don't know how to cook anymore. I mean, truthfully, don't ask me how to cook some of these things, but I should learn too. But the point here is we can get some of this good, nutritious food, especially food high in calcium, iron, and vitamin C that's important to Flint right now in the lead context. But we're teaching these classes. But here's where it becomes important. Because we're teaching those classes, we can rotate those classes a few degrees and start teaching specific to the kinds of nutritious aspects that are important in a lead absorption situation. And so we can train people to specifically cook vegetables that accomplish that for us. And we're now, I think at our class earlier this week, we had over 40 people, mothers and families and grandmothers and others interested in learning how to do this.
My guest is Dr. Jeff Dwyer. He's the interim director of MSU Extension. Jeff, you kind of anticipated my next question because a lot of money is going to be flowing into Flint. A lot of folks think that that should happen. But one of the major concerns is what kind of infrastructure is going to be in place to make sure that those monies are properly used and properly implemented. It sounds like you folks are already on the ground doing that to make sure that these programs are going to get delivered and that that money and those resources are going to be used in the best possible way.
I think you're right about that, Kirk. I think we are part of that infrastructure, but I also want to give appropriate credit to the infrastructure that already exists in Flint. And so let me use the milk example again. That started with a conversation on a Monday afternoon between me and Ken Nobis from the Michigan Milk Producers Association. By Tuesday afternoon, they not only had their end lined up with Kroger Corporation and others in terms of processing the milk, but literally it only took me 3 emails to the East Michigan Food Bank. And they were prepared to not only take the deliveries on Thursday and Friday, but then start getting it out almost immediately. So I think we're part of that infrastructure. I think other aspects of MSU are part of that infrastructure. But again, it comes back to the partnerships. And there are a lot of people working on the ground together already. And I think if we can infuse resources into that existing infrastructure in a variety of ways, we're better off because then we don't have to create new infrastructure. We can use what we have.
I don't want to in any way sort of denigrate all the great work you do in the rural communities, but let's go down to Detroit because there's a renaissance going on down there. A lot of things happening in urban agriculture, a lot of things happening in food and nutrition. Extension has a major presence in the city of Detroit.
Yes, we do. We have about 60 people in Detroit. And, you know, again, as a newbie, to brag a little bit on my new colleagues and the team I get to be a part of, you know, if you want to teach kids how to fish, we've got somebody to do that. If you want to teach families how to cook in the way that we're talking about, we got people who do that. But you're right. We also have people who are expert in urban agriculture. But we also have people who are expert in personal finance, in helping families deal with foreclosure issues, whether they actually go through foreclosure or maybe work out other alternatives. And so one of the things that we're thrilled about in the Detroit context is that we're invited to be a part of a variety of conversations. In fact, I was just down there yesterday afternoon having a series of conversations. And so you're right. It's exciting what's happening down there. We're thrilled that people recognize that we're on the ground there already doing things, and we can participate in lots of different ways.
Jeff, there's so many different programs we could talk about. We haven't even touched on 4-H and alternative energy, but you're going to be around for a while. We'd love to have you back on the program from time to time to give us updates in some of these other areas. And I've been talking with Dr. Jeff Dwyer. He is the interim director of MSU Extension. Jeff, pleasure having you on the program and look forward to talking to you again.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll come back anytime.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's more with Kirk Heinze.
We're in the middle of winter, but it's never too soon to talk about vacations in northern Michigan, and there's no place quite like the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island. And here to talk to us a little bit about tourism in general and the Grand Hotel is Dan Mustard III. He is the president of the Grand Hotel. Dan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for including me, and I'm pleased to say that the state of tourism is good. We had a wonderful season last year, and we're anticipating another one to come.
Yeah, some MSU researchers who look at this stuff every year say that I think tourism was up 5 to 10% last year in Michigan. It was really quite a good year. How was it at the Grand Hotel, and what do you attribute the increase to?
Well, I'd like to see superior – I'd like to say superior ownership, right? But I think our manager will say superior management, but there was a little pent-up demand, I think. But we saw, and we're not unique, you know, talking to colleagues around the country, a little longer stay, better room rate, and better spend once the guests got there of, you know, shops and bar and the other facilities that we offer. So just overall, you know, the island itself was up almost 10%, which is phenomenal because we had a good year the last year. So if we can match this year, we'll be happy.
Well, gas prices are continuing to be down. There is talk that 2016 could be another banner year. I mean, what are you hearing among your colleagues? I know you're very active in the tourism industry. You're a leader in the tourism industry. But what's the word on the street these days?
All good. You know, we're all looking for added value and more amenities and options for our guests. And in our case, we're adding a sushi bar, as well as some, you know, some infrastructure stuff that I guess guests don't really necessarily appreciate, but we need to do. You know, I think all those things speak to a little better value or options and value for the guests.
One thing that you folks have been committed to for a long time is sustainability and green initiatives. You do a lot, though, in the area of community sustainability. A couple years ago, I had a chance to come up for your history weekend. It was amazing. I mean, your historian is fabulous, but that history weekend speaks to your commitment to preserving the heritage and the culture of the island, not just environmental and economic success, but sociocultural preservation as well.
Oh, very much so. I mean, you know, my father was actively involved and started the DPW on Mackin Island. Through that, we closed our landfill, and now we take off and, you know, we transport any waste that can't, you know, and shouldn't go in the ground, goes elsewhere. And then we also, you know, we have a big surplus of horse manure that we use and make topsoil out of and also cap our landfill with. And my dad was kind of the spearhead of all of that. In that light, in recent years, we've converted all of our front guest rooms and air-conditioned them using heat exchange, heat pumps, that the happy byproduct is hot water, the potable hot water, which has enabled us to our big electric boilers that make domestic hot water for the guest rooms enable us to use like 14% less electricity, which is significant. we've learned that in August, when really, really hot, you know, days, we produce too much hot water from these heat exchangers, and we've run a line down to the pool. And so there's about 10 days or so in August that we heat our pool with these. And there's a couple days anyway that we've run a line to the golf course that we temper because it's too hot, but we use it to irrigate, which is better than obviously the metered water that we buy from the city.
So really, what you've got there is almost a closed water use system where multiple uses of that water, golf course, using it, pool, obviously pool.
Rooms, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, a pool, guest rooms, and you know, 10%, 14% maybe.
Last time we had your general manager on, Ken Hayward, we talked about the commitment to sourcing food locally, not only on the island, but as much as possible. I mean, given the fact that you have some logistics challenges, given the fact that you are an island, but you guys have made a commitment for that fabulous dining room that you've got and the cuisine, but you are looking at local food.
Oh, all the time. Obviously, dairies and all that we will always have, but you know, in more recent times, I think we buy every Chantel mushroom there is in northern Michigan when they're growing. And same thing, we've worked hard with a couple providers with organically grown miniature vegetables that are one, they're pretty and they taste great, and include them in our main dining room, but also throughout our the restaurants.
Oh, you guys are known for the beauty of your flowers and your gardens and things of that nature up there as well. I imagine that there are ways to maintain those gardens that are also green-friendly so that you're not worrying about nutrient runoff into the Great Lakes, for example, or into the water system of Mackinac Island.
We're not so worried about the runoff. We're more worried about producing and making topsoil. Mackinac Island's limestone. We're a big rock. So we save the geraniums that we pluck every day. We save all the organic things that we produce from the gardens, but also from the kitchen, and make a really rich topsoil that we mix with the one that we make, the city makes, with the horse manure. And the combination works. The city product is okay, but not great, but with our kind of richer, acidic ingredients that we put into it, it makes it work.
My guest is Dan Musser. He's the president of the iconic Grand Hotel. Dan, one thing when I came up there for that history weekend, you know, we both share a common alma mater, Albion College, and we both love to talk about Albion. But the things you did with baseball that weekend, looking at the 1880s and 1870s historic baseball and the reenactors, I mean, that was absolutely fabulous. Just another example of that commitment to history and culture that I talked about earlier.
Well, you're generous to bring that up. But, yes, you know, baseball is one of the things that tie our country together, right? I mean, it's almost like a cowboy era, you know. I mean, it's one of the things that is unique to our country and our history, our combined history, and we're glad to be part of that.
One question I like to ask people in the tourism business, recreation and tourism, how do you find when you survey your guests and what have you, that some of these green initiatives, that this emphasis on alternative energy and water reuse and wise management, is that becoming increasingly important to your guests, or is it a mixed bag?
I think it's probably a mixed bag. Guests are interested in kind of the operation of our facility because we're closed for half the year, and I think that part of that is these green initiatives that we've done, but I think they're as interested about it as just a general business practice. And you know, it makes sense. We're helping the environment and we're saving a buck. You know, it's kind of common sense, if you will. And so I don't know. I think a little bit of both.
It's interesting because we talked to a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners, everybody from General Motors and Ford, on this program to small mom and pop businesses. And the fact that you can do things that are environmentally friendly and make money at the same time, really driving the sustainability thing.
No question about that. And obviously that has to, and end of the day, I mean, we can talk about, you know, not washing the towels and all this stuff. But really, I mean, unless we come up with something, in our case, saving, you know, reusing water, you know, whatever it is that is sustainable for a number of years, why do it, you know?
It's a no-brainer. Well, Dan, I hope 2016 is another fabulous year for the Grand Hotel. Believe me, if my wife and I are able to and we're planning on, we'll be up again this summer. I've been talking with Dan Musser. He is the president of the Grand Hotel, located on beautiful Mackinac Island. Dan, thanks so much for being a guest on Greening the Great Lake.
Thank you for including me, and I hope your listeners will come see us. Thank you.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. There's more online at mlive.com/environment. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today. Michigan native and MSU alumnus Joshua Davis jumped at the chance to appear on NBC's The Voice last season, even though he wasn't familiar with the show.
I never seen the show before. I had kind of a distaste for reality television in general, and it's not really something that I was into at all. But we watched the show, and my nine-year-old, I felt comfortable with my nine-year-old watching it, and that was kind of a marker to me that it's a very supportive show. They focus on, you know, positivity rather than knocking people down. It's a program about building people up.
Davis decided to be true to himself and dove into the opportunity. He finished third.
I did the best I could, and I did what I do, and I've been doing for 15 years, and it really paid off. And it's gained me a lot of, you know, national recognition. I mean, you know, you can't buy that kind of press, and then you know, so now I'm just trying to, you know, shine a light on the great music scene that we have here in Michigan, trying to use the momentum in the right way with integrity, like I always have, working on new songs and going to put out some new music soon, but just you know, touring around, traveling, playing music like I used to, just bigger stages and more interesting opportunities.
Oh. Ward up to Petticoat Lane. One man's joy has been another man's pain.
Joshua Davis says his advice for young people who want to break into the hyper-competitive music world is all about hard work.
I know that we can turn it around. There's one thing that I found. If there's a voice within, singing a working man's head.
before The Voice, you know, I worked as a full-time musician for 15 years, and I made a living and paid a mortgage, and that's something that is not not a lot of people can say. And now it's even better than that. And but I don't think I would be in the place that I am now if I hadn't put in the work. And it's about loving what you do, but working as hard as you can at it, you know, just continuing to push at it, continuing to push at it. If you really love something and you work super hard at it day after day, you know, you can be successful at it. Every interaction that you have is an interaction that could possibly be a really important, you know, hinge in your life or your career, whatever it is. And so I try to be, you know, try to treat every relationship that I have with respect and try to hold that for myself, and I think that's been everything for me, is treating people well, and then you get treated well, and you know, you're going to be supported by your community, and that's the only way it happens. So yeah, that's my advice, is treat people well and work really hard. And that's classic advice, you know what I mean?
Davis learned about the importance of hard work during his time at MSU.
I was in the theater program here at State, and I learned about great work ethic. You know, if you love something and you work hard enough at it, then you're going to be successful at it. And that's kind of what being a Spartan left me with, is that work ethic and the sense of community that's here. Here at Michigan State was also the start of my musical career.
Davis has added his personal flair to his alma mater's iconic MSU Shadows.
MSU, we love thy shadows. When twilight's silence falls, flushing deep and softly paling o'er ivy-covered halls, or beneath the pines we'll gather to give our faith so true, sing our love for alma mater and thy praises, MSU.
I feel honored by this. It's going to mean a lot to my family, to the people that, to the alums in my family. You know, it means a lot to me. It's an important thing, and to be trusted with this piece of music this kind of like cornerstone of a community is really special. And I definitely don't take it for granted. I'm grateful for that. The minute I started working with the chords and arranging it, I knew it was going to be really nice. And it just kind of came out really sweet. It was really cool to work with a choir. It's not something that I do very often.
Davis was excited to update MSU Shadows, but wanted to be careful to remain true to the song's history and meaning to MSU alumni around the world.
It's got such a legacy, and it's such a, there's so much weight attached to it, kind of. And there's so many, you know, when you talk to alumni, you know, the song, it just means a lot to a lot of people. And so I think it's something that I wanted to make sure to handle in the best way possible, to handle gingerly, to play close attention, and to give honor to honor the past of it, its legacy, and to honor it, and not change it too much, but to change it enough that would maybe bring it to the present and make it more relevant for students right now, and to give it a more intimate kind of feeling, but to stick with that. You know, nostalgic, that sweet kind of narrative of the song that's just, you know, this reflection on years at school.
Visit joshuadavismusic.com. For MSU Today, I'm Russ White.
When from these scenes we wander and twilight shadows fade, our memory still will linger, where light and shadows play. In the evening oft we'll gather and pledge our faith anew,
sing our love for alma mater, and thy praises MSU.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Near or far, famous or known only to family and friends, one thing is clear. Every day, Spartans contribute to the common good in ways both big and small and are making a difference around the world. And they carry with them the spirit of Michigan State, proving again and again that Spartans will. And they all have a story, a Spartan saga.
As a physician and scientist, Andrea Amalfitano knows that although cures may not exist for the illnesses he sees, all hope is not lost. I'm Jim Peck, and this is a Spartan saga.
Hope plays an important role, and in fact, it's one that consumes me.
Already?
I hope so.
I'm a physician and I'm a scientist, so I combine the two. I teach medical students, graduate students, undergraduate students. I diagnose all kinds of genetic disorders. That's what I do.
Amalfitano received bachelor's and doctoral degrees in microbiology and a doctorate in osteopathic medicine from Michigan State. He is an explorer in medicine.
I see the rarest of the rare things. Many times being diagnosed with something rare is not good news. Many times it means very bad outcomes, unfortunately. And so I spend a lot of time trying to explain that to families, understand what they're dealing with, and best to my ability, give them prognosis information, as well as many things we can do. It may not be a direct cure, but many times we can support and make things easier.
Amalfitano splits his time between his clinic, where he sees patients, and his lab, where he develops gene transfer technologies that are used not only to treat genetic diseases, but also to attack other diseases, from malaria to colon cancer to HIV/AIDS. But his most significant breakthrough is in Pompe disease.
Pompe disease is a genetic disorder of, it turns out, not only the heart muscle, but also limb muscles, the muscles of your arms and legs, as well as the muscles that control your breathing. If you happen to have the form of disease where it's showing up very early, within a couple months of birth, you are very much at a higher risk of dying from that disorder because the severity is such that it affects your muscles that much more rapidly, it affects your heart that much more rapidly, and the typical lifespan up until a few years ago, you wouldn't live past the age of 2. I had the opportunity to participate in a clinical trial in which we first attempted a treatment for this disorder in the United States. And subsequent to that, based upon a number of studies both in the United States and internationally, a drug was derived exactly from the drug we had initially studied, and that's now available to all Pompe patients worldwide. And so now in my clinic, I have the opportunity to see these patients. They still turn up. They're still being diagnosed. But now I can prescribe something for which a few years ago there was nothing. Within a year or two, we find dramatic, not only stalling of the disease process, but actually reversal. And now these children are coming in and seeing me, and they're able to hop about the room, hop up on the bed to see me, and they're actually happy to see the doctor. And that's very fulfilling for me to see that, in fact, we can do that kind of a dramatic impact on these cases.
He says spending time with patients is critical to understanding the intricacies of an illness.
If I was strictly in the laboratory, I personally just think I would not have a clue about many of the conditions or the diseases that I'm attempting to treat right now based on our research. Being in contact with patients at a bare minimum is just sobering, you know, to see what families go through when they're affected with a certain disorder. Really just humbles you. It also humbles you in how much we don't know about many diseases. Certainly there's a lot we do know, but I am constantly learning new things from my patients. And the day you think you know everything is the day you should probably not be a doctor, because there's just too much out there that still we don't know, and patients teach me a lot. Every time I finally get in and talk with a patient, a patient's family one-on-one, it just reaffirms for me why I'm there and why I've chosen this field, and I recommend that to any of the medical students that are thinking about coming to medical school, that it truly is a fulfilling career choice.
For more Spartan Sagas, head to spartansagas.msu.edu. I'm Jim Pack.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hello, I'm Ken Nobis, president of the Michigan Milk Producers Association. Recently, our 2,000 dairy farmers stepped up to help the people of Flint. We partnered with the Kroger Company to deliver 12,000 gallon jugs of milk to the Food Bank of Eastern Michigan in Flint. That's more than 100,000 pounds of Michigan milk, a little over two semi-truckloads. This milk is being sent to the families impacted by the Flint water crisis. Milk in the diet is always important, but especially in Flint right now, because food that is high in calcium, including milk, can help protect children and families from the harmful effects of lead poisoning. For us, this was an easy decision. Donating milk is simply the right thing to do to help Flint families. This effort continues the work of Michigan's dairy farmers to help food banks across the state. We know that milk is always one of the most requested items at any food bank, and we welcome this opportunity to assist. We work closely with the food banks to be sure that families in need have access to milk for their children, and this is clearly a time when milk can make a difference. We couldn't have done this without the help from the Kroger Company, Quickway Carriers, Michigan State University Extension, and our partners at the Food Bank of Eastern Michigan. I am very proud of all those who came together to make this effort possible, and our thoughts are with the people of Flint during this very difficult time.
WKAR.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association with some important news. We've eliminated the dues requirement to make it easier than ever to become part of the Spartan alumni family. To associate with the world's largest organization of MSU alumni, all you have to do is tell us who you are and where you are. Visit msu.edu/connect and click the Update Your Profile button. Share your contact information and you're in. msu.edu/connect. It's that simple. And here's the story behind the story. We eliminated dues because we want you to be able to support whatever part of the university touches your heart. And we've created a Spartan Loyal alumni group with special recognition for alumni who contribute $100 or more per year to any college or MSU organization. Contribute to the Spartan Fund and you're Spartan Loyal. Contribute to the marching band and you're Spartan Loyal. Contribute to your college, a favorite student organization, or a scholarship, and you're Spartan Loyal. In a world where public support of higher education is increasingly at risk, your philanthropic investment in Michigan State University has never been more important. So visit msu.edu/connect to update your information and join the worldwide Spartan family. And for more details on how our elimination of dues can benefit you, visit the MSUAA website at alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association. We're Spartans helping Spartans. Join the movement today.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.